Good afternoon, and welcome to APS Market Call. I'm Steve Abrahams. Every now and then, a group of people decide to change the way things get done, and the more people involved, the harder it is. We're on the cusp of a big change today in a mortgage market with a lot of people involved. That includes investors worldwide trading more than $251 billion in an average day. The path to this point and from here forward is a case study in how big change happens. This all started with a problem the mortgage market had in the years after the 2008 financial crisis. The price of Freddie Mac pass-throughs lagged behind Fannie Mae, even though Freddie Mac, in theory, had a more valuable cash flow. Some of the difference came from better liquidity in the Fannie Mae market, some from better prepayments. In any event, mortgage lenders started hesitating to sell or securitize loans at the lower price on Freddie Mac pass-throughs. And to get the lenders back, Freddie had to lower the fees charged to guarantee mortgage securities. By some estimates, that cost Freddie Mac several hundred million dollars in the worst years. And since Fannie and Freddie were in conservatorship, that was money right out of the taxpayers' pocket. And that attracts attention in Washington. The cost of keeping separate pass-throughs for Fannie and Freddie set off a process of change that has brought us to today, and in June, the window opens to merge the two markets. Stephanie Milner, a director at Fannie Mae, has shepherded the process for her agency since 2014, and Mark Hansen, a senior vice president at Freddie Mac, has done the same for his agency. There are no two better guides to where we've been and where we're going, and in a moment, we're going to hand the call first to Stephanie in Washington, D.C., and then Mark in McLean, Virginia. After that, we'll bring the call back to New York for remarks by Kabir Vadera, head of pass-through trading here at Amherst. Then we'll open it up to questions that you in the audience can submit through your webinar screen. But first, let's go to Washington, D.C., and start with Stephanie Milner. Stephanie?
Hi. Thanks so much for inviting me to speak on such an important topic that is really, like you said, 5 years in the making and coming to fruition very soon here in the next few months. So I'm going to go a little bit through a presentation. I'm not really one for reading presentations, so I'll just kind of go through a few things. Just to remind everyone, I think Stephen touched on a lot of this, but, you know, to remind everyone, you know, why we're here and what this is, you know, in June, both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will begin issuing what's called the Uniform Mortgage-Backed Security, or UMBS. And the whole purpose of this initiative is to essentially merge the two TBA markets of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So the scope of this project is just the fixed rate, 30-year, 20-year, 15-year, and 10-year securities. Our non-TBA products are out of scope and not impacted by this initiative. So those would include things like ARMs, jumbos, reloads, our multifamily programs are out of scope, as well as our credit risk transfer programs are not impacted by the single security initiative. We will have this uniform UMBS. Like I said, it will start in June where we will begin to issue and guarantee. And, you know, this, you know, Stephen mentioned 2014 is when I started on this project. That's actually when the project was really born out of FHFA's 2014 strategic plan for the enterprises, where we were set forth on this path to create this new common security that would ultimately be fungible into one TBA market. And the purposes that FHFA set forth were to, you know, increase the liquidity of the TBA market, reduce the trading disparity seen between Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, like Stephen mentioned, in a more permanent and durable way, and then also to just, you know, maintain the TBA eligibility between the two securities over time. So that's sort of our purpose and why we're here today and so close to launching this initiative. The next slide, I just, you know, just to touch on or remind folks of a few of the features of the program. So we're the UMBS that we issue, it'll be, you know, individually issued by either Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, such that each of those enterprises will issue and guarantee their own UMBS. We use a concept called level one, which is just mortgage loans backing the pool, so the most basic level. There's also this concept of what we call level two, but is really re-securitizations of pools. So today, Fannie Mae has megas, Freddie Mac has giants. In the UMBS world, those will be called supers, and there will be commingling for the supers, meaning that you can create a super and have Fannie Mae, a mix of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac UMBS backing the super. We'll also have commingling at what we call level three, but are known as REMICs, our CMO programs, for the TDA groups only. So the issuer of the top level security is the guarantor. So if you have a super that's been issued by Fannie Mae, but it's backed by a number of Freddie Mac pools, that top level issuer, the last enterprise to create the security, would be the guarantor. So in that case, it would be Fannie Mae, even though the super is backed by Freddie Mac pools. We will share all of the features. The UMBS will have all of the features that you see in the Fannie Mae MBS today. So it will follow the 55-day payment delay. It will adopt the 01F FICC clearing code. It will also follow all of Fannie Mae's prefixes that you see for those products. So those are the CL, CT, CN, and CI, and then we also have the Z series, which are what we call our REMIC-backed megas, but will be REMIC-backed supers in the future, which are TBA eligible. So as far as, you know, disclosures, we are aligning in format there. Freddie Mac launched the new disclosure format actually a couple of years ago now, and Fannie Mae will be adopting that format when we go live with single security in June. So we are very much on track for June 3rd. Some of this, you know, is tied to what's called the Common Securitization Platform, which is a, you know, back office operational and technological platform that's being built jointly by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That is very much on track for June as well. So, you know, I think, you know, any message here is that if you're not getting ready, you absolutely should be. Because this is coming up very fast. A couple more items to note is, you know, forward trading in this market typically begins 90 days out. However, most of the volume is seen 60 to 30 days out. So while there may be some 90 days out, you certainly will see forward trading of UMBF, you know, 60 days out for sure. And then, of course, 30 days out will be a lot of volume. I think, you know, later on in this presentation, I'm not going to touch too much on the PC exchange because Mark Hansen is going to kind of dive into that in a lot more detail. The only thing I'll say here is that it actually will begin in May, and there's a couple different options you have to do that exchange if you so desire. So, you know, we have this program has made a tremendous amount of progress. I think early on in the program, it was very slow. And quite honestly, for the first couple of years, we didn't even have an exact date. So we were communicating and out talking to market participants, trying to develop the program, getting their feedback on how it should work. This definitely was not designed in a vacuum. There was tons of industry feedback on how this should be set up. And now we're in a place where the program has been well-defined for quite some time, and we've been working with market participants to educate them and to help in any way that we can, you know, to get them ready for single security in June. So, you know, we have a joint readiness team. It is comprised of people from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, as well as FHFA, and I apologize, I have like a GoWebinar thing all over my slide. But in any event, you know, we have this joint team. We have been working together this entire time. And, you know, we go out. We not only educate market participants and try to help them, but we also try to gauge in how different market participants are progressing in their readiness activities. And we have said all along that you would never want to launch this market if a significant amount of market participants were expressing that they could not be ready. And we've really reached a point that I would say over overwhelming vast majority of market participants have indicated to us that they are confident in being ready for the June go-live date. We track, you know, vendors, investors, dealers, seller servicers, from the largest to even some of the smallest ones that we can, you know, locate. And so we really have been out there talking and communicating with everyone. Back in December, we did hold an industry tabletop testing exercise where we walked through different scenarios like the PC exchange, forward trading of UMBS, dollar rolls of UMBS, rolls over transition, and talked through with all different types of industry participants that participated or came to that tabletop exercising. Many came in person and some were on the phone, and walked through all the scenarios just to see if there was anything we were missing, sort of from an operational and mechanical perspective in launching this new market. So I think that was really helpful for the folks that participated, and we did post those videos to our single security website. As far as the SIFMA update to good delivery guidelines, we acknowledge that that is a prerequisite to the UMBS market going live. We continue to work with SIFMA. FHFA works very closely with SIFMA on some of the items that SIFMA would like to see in the program, and ultimately coming to that, you know, vote and modification of the guidelines. So we do expect that to happen very soon. So I would just, all I can really say there is stay tuned for that piece. FHFA, you know, alignment of the enterprises has been a big topic and concern of the industry, and how aligned are Fannie and Freddie going to be, and how is that going to impact prepayment fees and ultimately security performance. So, you know, FHFA had a lot in place, you know, even a year ago in how they monitor the enterprise's new programs, or going back many years, actually, and how they monitor the enterprise's programs and new business, changes in business, and how that impacts prepayment speeds. But in September, FHFA put out a notice of proposed rule that set forth how FHFA was going to, you know, do this monitoring and sort of the parameters around, you know, prepayment speeds and what's the definition of misalignment or material misalignment. And the whole, you know, the whole purpose of the rule was, number one, to just be more public about FHFA's process and how this is all going to work. And number two, you know, that rule will go in the Federal Registrar and will become more permanent policy. So I think it alleviates some of the concerns that, you know, what if there's a change in the FHFA director and he or she doesn't want to do it this way, and how can we be certain that there's going to be a little bit more durability to the process? And this rule was an answer to that and really does make this a much more public and permanent process. So you can go to FHFA's website if you haven't seen what the proposed rule looks like. You can see what the draft looked like back in September. You can see what different industry groups commented. Those are posted as well. I think there were about 12 industry groups that commented. SIFMA was one of them. And we do expect a final rule very soon from FHFA. And then, you know, the bottom of this slide, which I don't want to touch on too much because it's going to be a large part of Mark's presentation, is the Gold PC Exchange. That is a very large part of this program, and Freddie Mac has made an incredible amount of progress in defining how that's going to work and really giving the industry a couple different options so that the industry can figure out and find which one works best for them. So with that, I will turn it over to Mark Hansen at Freddie Mac, and I will stay on the line for, you know, the questions at the end. Okay.
Great. Thanks, Stephanie. That gives you a good high-level view. I think one more way to think about this initiative at a high level is that in a lot of ways, Fannie is staying the same. You know, Fannie is the bigger of the two markets. It's the more liquid of the two. And so it was intentional on all of our parts to not disturb it any more than need be. And so a lot of the nomenclature, the framework, the mechanics, all those remain the same. More of the change is on the Freddie Mac side of the fence. And probably the most notable and obvious difference between our two securities is that we paid on different days of the month. Fannie's referred to as a 55-day security, typically pays on the 25th. Ours was 45, paying on the 15th. And so that 10-day difference, we wanted to close such that an investor could look at these cash flows and ideally become indifferent as to whether they were to get a Fannie or Freddie PC, which implies more than just the mechanics, but also the way that it prepays. But to get the mechanics lined up, we start with this topic of exchange. And Freddie has been working on it for quite a while. We had a first version of exchange that basically ran through the dealer process, much like you would create a giant. As you know now, you take many underlying Freddie pools that are of like coupon and term. You can put them together and get back what we call a giant. And what you get in return are the identical cash flows you put in, but they've been aggregated under one CUSIP. And there's typically a payment that goes along with it, a small payment. Well, when we thought about exchange, it has those same components. You're going to be getting back the same cash flows if you turn in a 45 that you'll be getting back on a 55. There'll be a payment attached. And at the end of the day, we're just giving you a different CUSIP, which means that you'll be receiving that payment on 55th, but it looks more like a Fannie Mae MBS or UMBS eventually. So to set up for that exchange, we started a process through dealers. We began by taking all the pass-throughs that are eligible for exchange, and it's all fixed rate that aren't committed to a REMIC in 100%. And so we have primarily TBA, but also some non-TBA. We created a mirror image of each one of those pass-throughs. There are over 70,000 of them. There's a duplicate of each one, with the one difference being that it is a 55-day payment rather than a 45. And so as people exchange either the full CUSIP or a portion of that CUSIP, what they'll get back is that mirror counterpart in this whole thing. That's going to be useful as we talk about the deliverable and how to think about the deliverable and to keep track of how much is exchanged. But we'll come back to it. But suffice it to say that this process of exchange works by using these duplicates that have already been issued into Bloomberg and reside with the Fed and sit in all the systems that you need them to right now. As people begin to exchange, you'll start seeing the numbers move, whether it sits in the 45 or 55. But again, the concept was, let's use mirrors through the dealer process and get going. 6 months ago, there were some concerns that the dealer process didn't fit all holders, that they wanted to maintain discretion, they wanted to maintain control. There are all sorts of reasons why they would rather not run it through dealers. And so what Freddie Mac did was commit with Tradeweb to a second path to exchange, where you could effectively go direct to Freddie, but using Tradeweb plumbing, if you will. Tradeweb, for many of you, already knows your sub-accounts. It has all sorts of connection that Freddie doesn't. And so by partnering with them, we were able to build a second bridge, if you will, into the Fannie market. We're still working on that. Tradeweb, I think, has begun taking on early customers, early onboarding, so that existing users or new users to Tradeweb can get on now and begin testing. I think that, you know, the number exceeds 70 at last count, but it grows by a dozen or so each week. So they're getting a subscription in that path as well. At the end of the day, what's most important to understand about exchange is that it's an option. It's not a requirement of investors. And that option is very important. Let's look at two different types of investors, a buy and hold and an active money manager. The active money manager might say, well, there's going to be much greater liquidity in this UMBS market. I want to get out of these gold securities that will no longer be made after a certain point in time, perhaps June, and get into the more liquid space. So they get to choose either of these paths as a way to get from 45 to 55. And typically that'll take two business days to accomplish. But for the buy and hold investor, they might not choose to do the exchange. At the end of the day, as we described, it'll be the same exact cash flows you would get as if you didn't exchange. And if it was buy and hold, is there really a need to be in the more liquid security? Because we're going to hold that option open for the foreseeable future to do exchange, even though that gold market, that old 45-day market, might not see many trades, we think that the prices will hold up and move in tandem with the new market. If they were to slip, and start to decline relative to them, well, there'd be opportunity for somebody to do the exchange and reap that difference. So a big part of this is keeping that option open so that all investors don't have to exchange. And that was very intentional on our part. So when we started talking about exchange, a lot of questions came up. Questions around taxability, recognition of gain or loss, how might this be treated depending on the holders in place. Freddie Mac has been running down those answers with Fannie Mae for the last couple of years, and we have most of them, we think, to satisfy the marketplace. The first question that comes up is, well, if I go down one of these paths to exchange, how much are you going to pay me for that 10-day delay, and what does that look like? And I think maybe if we advance to the next slide, we can talk a little bit about how we set that up. The objectives of the process were to make it fair and transparent and easy. And so having two paths, you know, is part of the easy path. In either path, you'll get the same compensation for your exchange. The concept at a high level was if you own this asset on your balance sheet at a given return, we want to hold that return constant, change the delay, pushing it back 10 days, and see how much the price changed. In that way, you get the same return that you gave up, then you should be indifferent. So what we chose to use was OAS as the metric for return and all of this. So on a daily basis, eventually, right now we're at a weekly frequency, but eventually we'll get to a daily refresh of a price grid that shows by coupon term and various specified characteristics how much Freddie would pay to delay your payment 10 days in the exchange process. Now, with today's level of rates, it's somewhere between 2.5 and 3 ticks is what it amounts to. And by doing that effectively, the OAS return should be the same at 45 as it is with 55 plus 3 ticks. And every day as the curve, the 10-year moves, the curve steepens, flattens, and prepayment rates change, those numbers will move around, but not by much. They're relatively sticky, as we're finding from day to day in this whole process. We put those price grids up so that the market can see where they'll be located and can start monitoring them from report to report, week to week, but also understand what the proceeds might look like if and when they choose to do exchange. Now, where this becomes important for your future trading is that, like any TBA trade, you want to know what the deliverable looks like. So today, if you were to conduct a Fannie trade or a Freddie trade, you would imagine what cheapest deliver looks like separately in each market, and whether it's an outright TBA trade or a dollar roll, price in that prepayment expectation into your transaction. Well, as we begin the UMBS market, the deliverable expands. Now you can be delivered any combination of Fannies and Freddies. And so part of that calculus will likely require you to think about, well, I wonder how much has already been exchanged from 45 to 55. Further, I wonder if there could be exchange from this point forward before I get to settlement that might change the deliverable. So what Freddie is going to be doing is providing all sorts of daily cumulative activity reports to give you a sense in each cohort how much has been turned into 55 day from 45. And you'll always know, as you do today, how much new issue 55 there is. So I kind of vision that there are three pieces to what you want to look like when you do a trade. You certainly know what's out there in Fannie space. You'll know what has been created new in Freddie space and what could be created via exchange, either has or could be created in exchange, and price your forward trades that way. Okay, let's go to the next slide. All right, so we talked about these two paths. Here's a little bit more detail to them. The original path was to basically call up a dealer, send them your QSIPs. 2 days later, you'll get back the mirror to those QSIPs and a cash wire and all of that. That first process did a delivery to dealer payment that was DVP, delivery versus physical. That became a problem for some that couldn't conduct trades that way. What we did in the second path was create a delivery free or free of delivery settlement process, where effectively the holder retains control of those assets throughout. If in some extremely remote scenario we were to be bankrupted and you're in the middle of your exchange, there would be trust receipts issued that further evidence that you have control of that asset throughout. So there's subtle differences. If you have an order management system at the front end of your kind of trading platform, Tradeweb is working with the larger ones right now to create very smooth, straight-through GUIs that further facilitate this process. With dealers, it's more kind of your traditional delivery path. So you can pick and choose. This gives you a little bit of distinction from one to the other. We intend to keep that dealer path open for the foreseeable future. The contract with Tradeweb runs 3 years. They have an option to keep it going beyond that, but we can at least guarantee for the first 3 years we'll keep that going. Okay, let's move on. Okay, I touched on this a little bit. You know, what we're trying to do is to make it fair, transparent, and easy. And the fair value, we just chose to use OAS. If you're more of a yield buyer, you could put yield in, and you would see that those numbers are pretty much in the same ballpark as OAS. It's just not that sensitive at this level of rates. But we will be tracking daily moves in the market, and those will reflect in these daily price grids. And they will be available on our website. Numerous dealers and data vendors are consuming them from our website and incorporating them into their systems. And all that should just make for greater ease of use on your part. There's a lot of description that goes beyond what I've said here, and there's a link on this page, freddiemac.com/mbs/exchange. If you go to the Fannie Mae equivalent, you'll find in single security a lot of other duplicate information that talks about the program, and both are worth checking out. Okay, next slide. As I mentioned briefly, there will be more to keep track of in all this. For those of you that are regular users of tradable supply reports, prepayment reports, largely what the manufacturers of those reports do is ignore giants, megas, anything that we would call second-level securities. If you just keep track of the original security, then you're sure not to double count or miss anything. But things are a little different when we start doing exchange, and they're different because a holder of a giant might choose to exchange the giant. And so you need to kind of now do the math back and forth between the first and second level of securities. To help clarify all that, we have these four reports that are listed here. There'll be a daily exchange activity that will show, you know, day-to-day how much has come in. I think we'll report early the next morning is my expectation. The cumulative report will be from the beginning of exchange, you know, early May, until whatever point in time you are, how much has been turned in. These aggregate L1 reports, the level one reports, are there to help you sort out this notion of megas and giants, L1s, L2s, not megas and giants, but giants and pass-throughs rather, and just how much is out there in a given cohort. And then to further help those that put together reports for prepays or tradable supply or the index providers, we're going to have tie-out tables such that when you run queries, you can make sure that your denominator ties out to what we think is the appropriate denominator of that cohort, and that you can have greater confidence in what you're querying and how you're going forward with that information. Okay, let's keep going. Yeah, and I was just notified that cumulative file is outstanding. You can find it now on our website. So a lot of these things are in various stages of being staged up on our website. You can be assured that all of them will be ready as we approach go live and all of this. This slide dates back maybe a year or two as we started pursuing SEC and IRS. As I've described here a couple of times, you're getting back the same exact cash flows on the same exact loans when you do exchange. So the question we posed first to the SEC was, so when someone exchanges, is that really a buy and a sell? Do they have to recognize gain and loss? And after much deliberation, they came back with, no, it's not a buy and a sell or a gain and a loss. It's a minor modification. And so that should be a great comfort to all the accounting professionals that need to now track this transaction. What IRS did, though, was stop short. They said, well, when you do the exchange, that's not gain or loss. We further asked, well, how about that three ticks of float compensation? Are you going to tax that? And they did not render an opinion on that. They left that instead to your own interpretation. So we have some language here. I don't want to read it verbatim, but that second bullet is worth understanding or passing to your team. Freddie Mac will be doing a variety of things, not taxing it ourselves, but keeping track of who the users are, collecting W-8s and W-9s, and basically leaving that decision to you, the holder. Right. What will, and I have much sharper helpers here. So as Jamie points out, I think in most cases, Jamie, you want to describe the basis adjustment?
Yeah. So just to go back to the float compensation, as Mark said, we did not get a ruling from the IRS on the float compensation payments. So Freddie Mac has determined that we are going to treat that float compensation as an adjustment to the basis of the security rather than a taxable event. So we will not withhold or report that float compensation. However, as Mark said, we are collecting W-8s and W-9s through the TradeWeb path just as part of the KYC process to make sure people are qualified to use that path. If we aren't able to collect a valid W-8 and/or W-9, as the case may be, then investors will have to use the dealer path.
Great, great. Thank you for all that. So let's go back to the dealer path versus the Freddie Mac path. In the Freddie Mac path, you will definitely be getting a cash wire back. What we've heard from, I would say, a majority of dealers on the dealer path is that they would likely do this basis adjustment on the trade tickets. So imagine if you are turning in a 45, and let's just say that 45 is at par in 3 in the market. What you'll likely get back is in a Freddie Mac transaction, we're not going to capture price, but you would get back the 55 plus 3 ticks of cash. What you might get from the dealer path, though, is your 55-day security marked down 3 ticks. And that would be fair compensation for the cash that ultimately will go to the dealer, and they will net that out of your 55-day purchase or effective purchase and all of that. So, again, things that distinguish the two paths. There's much more detail on some charts we have on our website. So if you're confused, call me or Jamie, but also realize there are resources on the website. Okay, let's move on to this next page on float compensation. Covers a lot of what we just talked about, how we'll treat this payment, what Freddie Mac's intentions are. It's a lot of fuss to get, basically your accounting, your back office, all of your systems to properly recognize this as a modification, not a gain or loss. So we've heard others that think about, if I don't want to tie up my back office, here's how I might do exchange over time. Let's just say I'm in gold 3.5s today, and sometime down the road, I want to be in 4s. Well, maybe I'll just sit on my gold 3.5s, and when it comes time to ask for a swap from a dealer, I'll get UMBS 4s, and I'll sell them my 3.5s. Now I don't have to go through all of that exchange. The dealer has their own mechanism for doing exchange with their own inventory and customers as well. And so I suspect that there'll be a variety of ways of either not exchanging because it's the same cash flows, using the two bridges that we've built, or just waiting until it's time to move out of that position and asking the dealer to offer you a swap from one cohort to another. So time will tell. A question that comes up frequently is, well, how much float or how much exchange do you need, want for this to be successful? What are your expectations? And we've given it a lot of thought, and I think that we're not looking at exchange as a metric for success in this project. At the end of the day, we're trying to get two markets to trade as one. Certainly, if everybody exchanged day one, you would force that outcome. But we think that the kind of the nuance of the exchange option means you don't have to, that you can enjoy the price performance without having to go through that. So I think, the more frequent response is, well, we're gonna wait and see. We're buy and hold. We might wait and see if we need to exchange, if those price relationships hold up as you describe, it might just be easier for us to stay in 45. There are those that are saying, I might wait to see if there are any squeezes in gold. If you're going to stop making them, I don't want to turn them in before I know that they might be useful and there might be a premium for them somewhere in the market. But I think that after the probably the second or third month as all those trades settle, what you'll start to see, and probably the best outcome for us would be a very gradual and iterative process. We can handle a lot of exchange in a given day, but not all of it at once is maybe a simplification of it all. And so we would hope for an orderly exchange process where there's no need to rush toward the doors, but it's there if you want it or need it and all of that. All right. So with that said, maybe we have a variety of resources we've pointed to. They're both Fannie and Freddie's websites that have a lot of great information. There's a particular document in there called the Playbook. It's about a 50-page-plus document that back offices need to read, and it wouldn't hurt the front office to take a look at it too. But it's really kind of a requirements document for understanding the timing, the mechanics, the formats, how this all comes together. There's certainly live people. We have a team, Fannie has a team, that are available for questions. We have, I think, a blast email that is north of 1,700 people now that receive anything that's important, plus a monthly newsletter that's co-authored by Fannie and Freddie, and hotlines that you can dial as well. We also have, for those of you that didn't partake in our May conference in 2018, which was a very informative event, we're going to have one March 4th in New York. It's a Monday. I think it's the Sheraton at Times Square. You need to be registered to attend. I think we've had an overwhelming response already. Well north of 300 have applied for registration. We still are 2+ weeks away. And, well, I guess a little under 2 weeks now, just a day under 2 weeks. But if you want to hear from the Treasury, from FHFA executives, Fannie and Freddie executives, vendors, and people with a lot of subject matter expertise, that would be a day well spent at the conference. So look for that. You can reach either Fannie or Freddie if you haven't received an invite and want one. All right? So at this point, perhaps I can turn it back to Steve, and we can open it up for questions.
Mark, thank you, and also Stephanie, thank you for your earlier remarks. We'll get to questions in a moment, but for now I want to turn to Kabir Videra. Kabir heads pass-through trading here at Amherst, and will be in the middle, literally, of this transition to single security. The first forward contract, as Stephanie mentioned, for the new uniform MBS could start trading as early as March 12th, right after regs settle. So turning to Kabir, what's on your radar for this transition?
Good evening, everyone. So thank you, Mark and Stephanie, for doing all the heavy lifting. This is one of the few instances where the transition for the trading front office side is going to be a lot more straightforward and simplified compared to the middle of back office transition. Just going to keep this really simple. Obviously, gold Fannie swaps have been trading higher for the last few months. Obviously, as we approach the transition date, they should be converging to their fair economic value. We've spoken to a lot of accounts, and obviously a lot of accounts, their holdings of gold is as high as it's been in quite a while in anticipation of the exchange. Finally, you can extract the value of the Freddie delay after many years. As far as TBAs go, obviously this is one area, especially gold TBAs, as we approach the exchange, we'll be very cautious. Especially being short gold TBAs, you don't want to be short something that is effectively going away or is shrinking. There is definitely a risk of a short squeeze in gold TBAs and gold rolls, especially on days when large volumes exchanges go through. So we're definitely cognizant of that. And I would say, lastly, I'm sure most of you already know this, given that there are 55,000 CUSIPs outstanding, Freddie has basically offering a flat fee of $2,500 to create Giants. So for investors that have a bunch of similar-looking line items, it basically costs next to nothing to aggregate them into one Giant. And obviously, we'll reduce the operational hassle of doing exchanges by basically reducing the number of exchanges. So that's something to keep in mind. Out here, just from a trading perspective, again, we'd be very reluctant to short gold TBAs. We run a hedge our entire book as much as possible with fannies unless we have, like, low payout pools. And we don't see any major dips in gold fannie swaps unless the fannie rolls catch a bid. On a forward basis, I think these swaps should be trading pretty close to their fair value. Lastly, I think this is a really interesting point. I think Steve and Stephanie and Mark touched upon this. The way the float, if you have a specific gold CUSIP, obviously Freddie's publishing a grid on their website, but to make it really simple, to really kind of get some level of granularity, what I would suggest is you look at the mirror UMBS and the CUSIP that is associated with that Freddie CUSIP, and you plug both bonds, the Freddie and the mirror UMBS in Bloomberg, solve for the same OAS, and what are the price differential is, that should be very close to what the float composition should be. And this obviously has the advantage of being a more dynamic kind of way of calculating the fair value. And if the market rallies or sells out dramatically, it could be a little bit more, I would say, up to speed with the grid that's out there. So that's something to keep in mind. I think that's pretty much it from the trading standpoint. I think the next big deliverable from us from the trading standpoint is, as was mentioned before, is SIFMA basically finalizing their TBA contracts and what constitutes, you know, good delivery into the UMBS contracts. So that's obviously the next, I would say, major milestone as far as the TBAs go. But that's it from me, and I think we're up for let's Steve take it up, and I think we're close to taking questions.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Kabir. So that wraps it up for prepared remarks. If you're on the webinar, you should notice a box on the right-hand side of your screen that allows you to begin answering questions. And we would be happy to take questions from the audience at this point. And we're starting to get some that are just rolling in. So I'm getting one question right now, just asking to elaborate first on the adjustment to the price of 3/32 for a PC exchange. No, actually, sorry. I guess somebody heard that there was whether there would be a change in the exchange compensation if there's a change in demand for securities.
No, the value of the compensation for the exchange, it's not a supply demand thing. It's going to be solely a function of the fundamental value of the delay, and which is why plugging equal OAS on Bloomberg should get you to very close to what the final flow composition should be. It's the supply and demand in this case is immaterial. It's all about the kind of security you have and the coupon. So obviously, a loan bal 4.5 will have a greater composition than a TBA 4.5, and a 4.5% pool is going to have a greater composition than a 3% pool. I think that's I don't think there's any supply demand kind of factor out here.
Then a question, just Mark, maybe this is for you, asking for a repeat of the details on the conference that you mentioned upcoming in New York.
Yeah, the intent, I think, you know, our conference back in May was titled Single Security, Will You Be Ready? And the parallel for this conference will be Countdown to Go Live. So we're really getting down to the final stages of things. The intent is to, as was just mentioned, we're still waiting on the good delivery language and approval and vote and all of that. So if we have that, then we can get real specific about dates and deliverables and where things go. So that's a kind of a condition to things. But the agenda of the conference will start high level. It'll have senior execs from Fannie and Freddie. It'll have Craig Phillips from Treasury, we believe. It'll have Bob Ryan from FHFA. These have all been the principals to this initiative for years now, and in supporting it and steering it and guiding it. Then we'll have panels that that include vendors that talk about their readiness, including index providers. I think I'm involved with Renee Schultz from Fannie to talk about what alignment is and what that is going to look like. Likely there will be some very new and stringent restrictions on Fannie Freddie speeds and variation going forward. So we're going to talk about how we might be able to manage that into the tolerance. I think there'll also be some discussion about re-securitization. You know, what we haven't talked about here is the REMIC market. You know, sometimes we call that level three, but historically Fannie and Freddie have kept to their own collateral when putting REMICs together. We did not get too deep into this, but the new capability, you know, Fannie has Omegas, we have Giants. There'll be an equivalent called Supers. And what a Super is just a roll-up of any combination of Fannie and Freddie pools into that larger aggregated one with the new feature that you can commingle Fannies and Freddies. So when we start thinking about Supers, the question began with, well, who's going to REMIC the Supers then? And what it led to is that beginning in go live, Fannie and Freddie's REMIC shelves will open their doors to one another's eligible collateral, and largely that will be TBA collateral that that previously was segregated and now can be commingled in REMIC space. So there'll be a discussion of that. I think there'll be an ample amount of Q&A throughout the whole process. And I'm looking to Jamie. Any others that I've left off?
We will have obviously a panel on exchange to go through the details of exchange with dealers and custodians and TradeWeb there. And then the last panel of the day will be really about the market's transition. So what people can expect from March to June as we move forward these significant milestones toward the go live. So it's going to be a packed day, as Mark said, really just getting down to the final finishing touches on getting everybody ready to go live on June 3rd.
Right. And I think that last panel will have the same kind of tone that we have in this call, webinar, which is there'll be a voice from traders, investors, research people, all trying to put it together to think through and talk through the transitions.
Great, Mark. Thank you very much. So we're getting a series of questions, a number of them, about TBA trading and dollar rolls. So let me see if I can hit Kabir with all of them at once. So the question is, with UMBS essentially presumably becoming the core of the TBA market, first, do you expect Fannie and Freddie TBAs to continue trading, number one? And number two, how do you expect the Fannie and Freddie TBA market to behave, specifically the Fannie TBA market, if the Freddie rolls during the transition start going away?
Yeah, so I think on the Fannie side, as you know, Mark mentioned early on, nothing should really change. Fannie's not changing. It's still an FNCL, the same FICC code. Nothing's really changing. Fundamentally, what's going to happen is that simplistically, effectively the float of the UMBS or the Fannie 55 delay or basically 55 day delay securities, it will close to double. So obviously that has impacts on roll specialists going forward. So suddenly the size of the underlying good delivery QSIPs doubles, and obviously the probability of a roll specialist going forward is going to decrease dramatically, and also the odds, and I would say small odds of the worst 5%, the worst decile being a lot worse than it was previously, those odds go up as well. But I don't think the mechanics or liquidity of Fannie, TB, or UMBS should be affected at all. On the Freddie side, obviously you're creating a TBA where where every day or the underlying
float can is effectively vanishing. So we'll be very cautious with Freddie TBAs, especially being short TBAs. If an account wants to sell their Freddie's out instead of doing exchange, there could be an issue because unless we get a QSIP where we can price out what the delay is, in the absence of that, it'll just be what if the gold Fannie swaps or the gold UMBS swaps are, and obviously that could be moving target depending on what the gold rolls do, given, you know, there could be some collateral scarcity and, you know, you might be a short, you could be short a lot of gold TBAs and might not be enough collateral to satisfy that short. So we'll be very concerned about that. Which is why I think it'll be better if everyone, you know, obviously goes through the exchange as soon as possible. And, you know, the more trading happens in the UMBS, I think that's better. I think liquidity on TBAs will be challenging. Having said that, if you have a TBA-like QSIP, that should not be affected. I want to make that very clear. Just pricing a TBA without dealing with a QSIP could be a challenge. But if you have a QSIP, I don't think liquidity on that cash flow will be affected at all because you can always back out the fair value just given what the flow composition will be.
What do you think about a Fannie TBA market? Do you think we're still going to see a separate Fannie TBA market alongside UMBS?
It's unclear. I mean, again, this is just me speaking. We've seen we've heard about some accounts might step. When they buy UMBS TBAs, they might stick Fannie only just given they have these diversification requirements, especially for these variable annuity endowment and life insurance contracts. So that could be that's always a question mark, but I do not think, you know, Fannie TBA should be affected. Effectively, like Mark and Stephanie mentioned, Fannie is not changing. It's not going away. It's just Freddie's being converted to Fannie. So all 55-day delay securities, it's tough to see how it will not be business as usual going forward.
So interesting question, just again, focusing on the transition, this time around specified pools. Would you expect that we're going to see in the UMBS market the same kind of specified pools created around loan balance or geography or FICO and so forth?
Yeah, I think as far as the QSIP market goes, I think it should be pretty straightforward. I think nothing should change as far as pooling. Like I said, all that will happen is you're just going to have all the delay is going to be 10 days longer, and you'll be compensated for that. But as far as the nuts and bolts of specified pools, how originators pool bonds, I don't expect the market to be different from what it's right now.
Okay, and then just one other question on the TBA market around the nature of the worst to deliver, and I think you alluded to something along those lines. Do you expect worst to deliver effectively the marker for the TBA price to change in the UMBS market?
Well, to put it really simply, it definitely won't be getting better. It can only get worse. The question is how much worse will it be? And obviously the enterprises are taking a lot of expending a lot of time and effort to make sure that the convergence in prepays that's taken place over the last many years continues, and it's not some kind of race to the bottom as far as faster prepays. So like I said, my baseline is that the biggest negative for TBAs will not be a fundamentally worse deliverable, but it just be a much bigger float. So the likelihood of short squeezes happening is obviously a lot lower. So that's, but again, there could be certain cohorts, certain coupons, certain vintages where, you know, the worst decile could obviously get, you know, be incrementally worse than what it is right now. But I don't think that's the biggest risk of TBAs. The biggest risk of TBAs is just that you have twice as many QSIPs that are in good delivery right now. So hard to see how rules could be trading special going forward.
You know, the one thing for people that are interested about this issue of the worst to deliver, Stephanie mentioned that SIFMA had submitted a letter to FHFA in response to the implementation of the UMBS. And the letter, which is dated November 16th, has some very specific requests that Stephanie mentioned that Fannie, Freddie, and FHFA acknowledged as a requirement to launch. So you may want to go to the SIFMA website and read both the summaries of that letter or the letter itself, and you'll see that SIFMA is asking for these rules to be written into a regulation, which would at least give it some protection against changes in the staff or the policy at FHFA going forward. They have some very specific requests for how prepayment alignment will be defined, how the underlying pool characteristics should be monitored, and then the remedies that will be available to the regulator if it finds the GSEs failing to discipline that market. So there's clearly a lot of concern and a lot of interest. So there's one other there's another question that we're getting, and this is around treatment of the exchange of a Freddie pool into a UMBS for diversification purposes. This really becomes an insurance question because various insurance contracts require that securities meet certain minimum diversification requirements. I don't know if this is one that Mark or Stephanie would like to address on IRC 817 diversification.
Yeah, so 817H, I think, is an IRS rule that governs monies managed for variable interest contracts. It's a lot of pension funds, some insurance products. And at its core, it's trying to get name diversification. So the rule stipulates that you can't have more than 55% in any one issuer, 70 in two, 80 in three, 90 in four. So, you know, in today's market, you hold Fannies and Freddies, and you can go up to 70% holdings. The question is, though, when you start doing TBA UMBS trades, and you don't know what the delivery looks like, how do you classify that? So after a lot of back and forth, the IRS put forth an election, not a requirement, but an election, where if you wanted to and you don't know what you're going to be delivered, the spirit of it was to say, let's use some kind of ratio in accordance with how Fannie and Freddie have issued over the last year. So there's been a very steady ratio going back 20-plus years where Fannie's in the ballpark of 60% to Freddie's 40. Sometimes it's up and down a couple of percent, but not much more than that. So they said, let's just use 60-40, and every year we'll update that number. What's come back from the practitioners is, well, that doesn't cover everything. The way you wrote it doesn't necessarily cover open trades. We would like the ability to, when we know what we're being delivered, to actually use that ratio and not have to impose this 60-40 percentage. It's still a topic that's being discussed through SIFMA, potentially with IRS, to see if they can get further clarity. There are a couple of ways you can manage around it. You can always, if you're close to the limit, you can always stipulate your next trade, but that typically comes at a cost. You could buy known pools, and then you don't run this risk. You could also go back to the supers that we talked about. And let's say that you were close to your limit in Fannies, you know, you're near the 55. You could take a slug of Fannies and wrap them into a commingled supers issued by Freddie, and now those should count as Freddie Mac securities. And there's no limit to how many times you can ping pong between one GSE and the other to keep renaming things. But there's still a lot of angst around the implementation of it. There might be more to be understood between now and June, but those are the basics.
Okay, Mark. Thanks very much. Kabir, you had a thought.
We obviously there are a lot of questions that we have received that were left unanswered. I would recommend all customers who dialed in that have questions that were not answered to please send those questions to their salespeople, and we'll try to get back to as many as we can.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, there's a host of questions about fees, about the TBA market, about whether certain kinds of Fannie and Freddie pools can be combined and then put into REMIX, the timing of when quotes may show up on Bloomberg, and so on and so forth. We will compile the questions, try to put together written answers, and then we'll recirculate them to the people that are on this call. But just watching everyone's time, we're probably going to wrap up Q&A at this point. We do thank you again for listening today. Remember that your sales and trading coverage here at Amherst Pierpont can help you. If you have questions during the transition to single security, as Mark and Stephanie mentioned, there are also ample resources available at their institutions from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the Federal Housing Finance Agency as well. So, again, thank you for joining us today. That's it. From APS Market Call, I'm Steve Abrahams. Good luck in the markets.